Rick Foster, the managing director of LDS Charities, says the fact that every year hundreds of refugees arrive in Utah to escape persecution and conflict should be seen as an opportunity for Utah residents.
As I've seen in my life and the life of my children, that as we engage with immigrants and refugees and people that are marginalized because of maybe some economic diversity, that as we serve each other, that both the giver and the receiver are blessed in significant ways, that lives are changed in significant ways.
Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, a panel discussion about how Utah is welcoming refugees into our communities. That's coming up, but first, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a discussion held a few weeks ago about how Utah is helping refugees to settle here in the state from various troubled places in the world. The conversation today is mostly on what services are available through local government or nonprofit organizations for refugees, the experiences and challenges that refugees commonly face after arriving here, after escaping persecution and conflict in their home countries, and the benefits that refugees bring to Utah's communities and native residents. The conversation was recorded on November 14th. The panelists include Missy Larson, the chief of staff of Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes, and a longtime advocate for refugees settling in Utah. In 2009, Larson helped to found the Utah Refugee Coalition, now the Utah Refugee Center. It's an organization designed to connect government offices, nonprofit organizations, and businesses with the core mission of helping incoming refugees to integrate into Utah's communities and to build self-sufficiency. Also on the panel is Rick Foster, the managing director of LDS Charities, the humanitarian aid agency aligned with the Mormon Church that works throughout the world. Also, Asha Parekh, the director of the Refugees Services Office within the Utah Department of Workforce Services, and Sabata Ramba, a refugee from South Sudan who arrived in Utah in 2000 from a refugee settlement area in Kenya. Ramba graduated from the University of Utah in 2014 with a major in political science, and he's an active member in Utah's South Sudanese community. And the conversation was moderated by Eric Rohn, a student at the University of Utah.
Well, I'd like to just start off the discussion with a general question of what is Utah's goals in handling refugees incoming and the ones that are currently here, and where are we going and how are we helping the refugees?
Maybe Asha should start with that one.
Sure. Our goal is to help refugees integrate successfully into the state of Utah. And so I think the way that we really want to define integration is by looking at some of the key areas that people need to be successful, because integration can mean so many different things. So the way that we're starting to really make it more operational in our work is to look at successful integration involving helping people access housing that's affordable and accessible in the areas that people are resettling. We're looking at employment, making sure that we're providing support for refugees to access short-term training and start employment in areas that will allow them to have a livable wage. We're looking at healthcare and making sure that people have access to good quality healthcare. And then the fourth area is education, making sure that people have access to educational opportunities that will allow them to be successful in their lives. Those are, I think, some of the key pieces. There's other areas as well. For example, English, making sure that people, refugees who move to Utah have the opportunity to learn English and be successful in that process so that they can access all of the jobs, make sure they know about the culture here so that they can be successful in accessing employment and all of those pieces that we talked about. And then eventually making sure people are have obtained citizenship and know about all of the rights that they have, that as citizens we have access to. So I can stop there.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. We talk about the three main, education, healthcare, and then and workforce. So how does the Attorney General's office work in ensuring we are protecting refugees as citizens and make sure and we're integrating them into those main facilities?
Well, let me start by asking in the room, does everybody know the legal definition of what a refugee is in comparison to what an asylee would be or an immigrant? Raise your hand if you don't know that difference. Okay, there aren't. Asha, could you go through maybe the difference?
So a refugee is someone who has experienced challenges in their process of in their home country. So people who have experienced torture or religious persecution. So I can't at this moment remember all of them. Maybe you could help me, Missy.
I have the exact definition here. A refugee by statute is any person who is outside any country of such person's nationality and who is unable to return to and is unable to avail himself or herself of the protection of that country because of persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. So people who are known as refugees actually have a legal status that is given by the State Department coming into. And that's when you hear people talk about refugees, the difference between that or immigrants, that's where it differs. And so there are resources for refugees coming in, not at the level that you could even imagine. If you thought about what it would take your family to move across the world and live in somewhere comfortably, it's not anything near that. In the past, the State Department used to pay less than $1,000. It was about $860 or something per person when they were coming in to be able to live for 6 months. That's time that it is to learn a language, find a job, all of that. It has doubled now. And actually, Secretary Clinton was the one that helped get that doubled. So it is now up to about, $1,600 per person. But that's why people really, really depend on nonprofit organizations as they're bringing people in. And there are resettlement agencies that work to bring people in. So if you hear of the International Rescue Committee, that is one that is here. The Catholic Community Services is also in Utah. And those two agencies, and there are others that are looking at being actual resettlement agencies. It is a long process to go through the State Department to do that. There are about 10 international now. I think there used to be 12. There's 10 now. And now there's 10 around the world.
Nine.
So, and around the world. And those are agencies that actually work to bring people from refugee camps and put them in, the United States takes more than all of the countries put together to put them in. And the thought is we're able to sustain some movement within our communities and our economy to be able to help these people integrate, as Asha talked about. So the Utah Attorney General's office, we obviously treat refugees the same way that we would citizens, but there are some particular things that come, and they're things that you wouldn't even think of. So for instance, last year, a member of Asha's office called, and they were so frustrated because there were a number of refugees coming to them, and they were not able to get the in-state tuition for the universities, for the public universities. And imagine being a refugee and trying to go to school and having no money, no resources, and really knowing to get on top of things you had to be educated. So first of all, you have to learn the language. And you get yourself to the point where you're doing so well and you get to a university, and then they charge you out-of-state tuition. Well, because refugees have this certain status, we were able to look at the law and figure out that refugees could get in-state tuition even upon landing, the same way that they can get jobs, the same way that they can get the resources when they land. So we look at very intricate issues. We respond to those things, and because of that, we were able to look at the law and that and solve that issue. That's just one example.
Interesting. And so you bring up a good point, though, on what resources are available for the refugees that are coming in here and are currently here. And that nonprofit organizations are essential in helping that. So maybe you can speak a little bit to the LDS Church's involvement in assisting refugees.
So the LDS Church, their primary concern with refugees is sustaining life, making sure that people aren't marginalized in terms of their life and their livelihood. And so for us, that's first and foremost, and that's why we do so much work as an organization internationally, engaging, providing support in refugee camps and other places where refugees find themselves. And then domestically, it's to help these nine agencies that Missy has referred to in resettling these individuals, helping them feel welcomed, helping them feel loved, helping them feel a part of the community, and then engaging in providing the kinds of support that Asha has mentioned, whether that be housing or furnishings or education, learning English, finding jobs, any way that we can help these individuals become self-reliant and contributing members to any given community.
So maybe one of you talk about the program out at the Humanitarian Center, because that one's pretty amazing with the English.
So there's a national program that's recognized that we have at the LDS Church's Humanitarian Center out by 215 and about 17th South, where we actually employ refugees. We provide a job for them in teaching them work skills that can be then transferred into the private sector. We provide that in a very safe environment where they earn a wage just above minimum wage. But then the thing that's so beautiful about that program is that we're helping them develop a plan as far as where they want to be and where they want to go, what kinds of education and training are needed to attain those goals. The LDS Church provides support and financing to do that. And then we also, 4 hours a day, pay them to participate in an English training classroom setting. So they're with their peers and learning English. And so they're actually employed for a full 8-hour day, paid to work 4 hours and paid to sit in English class for 4 hours. We keep them in that class for typically 9 months to a year, or as soon as they themselves determine that they want to graduate from that program, if they can find a good paying job outside of that program. But again, that's one, and that we're looking at as a church, as an organization, at expanding that program into more of our what are called Deseret Industries thrift stores around the Western United States. It's had such great success in that particular setting that we're looking now at expanding that into several of our other stores.
And Asha, what would you say English is one of the largest barriers to gaining employment for a refugee?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you don't know how to communicate effectively with your employer, or if you think about going to a job interview, you have to be able to sell yourself in America. And if you don't speak English, that in itself is a difficult prospect. So helping people learn the language well enough so that they can show off what they do know and be able to talk about how they can contribute to the workplace is a really important piece. And just in terms of the types of jobs you can access really changes as you increase the level of English that you learn. So that it makes a big difference, I think. I think the other piece about integration that we haven't talked about, I mean, I listed some of the key things that probably make sense to people in the audience, but I think there's a piece about relationship building that is also critical for refugees as they come in, and it's called social bonding, social bridging, and social linking. Those are three areas that seem really critical. So in terms of bonding, it's making sure that refugees have the ability to connect with people who are like them, who are experiencing the same process, who will know about how to get connected in this culture. So somebody from the Democratic Republic of Congo, you know, needs to have the opportunity to meet other people from Congo who have resettled already and know about where the grocery stores are that sell the kinds of foods they want. They need to meet with people who are like them, who have integrated here, and learn the secrets of that process. But they also need to meet with people from outside of that community to get connected, to learn about what is going on here and get connected with people who have resources outside of their community so that they can be successful. And then the piece that talks about social linking is making sure people learn about systems in this country, how the government system works, how the educational system works, so that people know how they can access the services and resources that are available to them. So I would say that that's one of the pieces that's really critical, learning about the culture here.
That's Asha Parekh, the director of the Refugee Services Office within the Department of Utah's Workforce Services. Today we're airing a discussion about the process of helping refugees settle in Utah and the services made available to them to acclimate to life in Utah. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCBW. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCBW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we replay them, unedited, in their entirety as a public service. Today, we're airing a panel discussion recorded a few weeks ago about the experience many refugees have upon settling in Utah. The state and many nonprofit organizations throughout the state have developed programs over the last many years to better assist newly arriving refugees and help them become thriving members of our society. The panelists today include Missy Larson. She's the Chief of Staff to Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes and a longtime advocate for refugees settling in Utah. Rick Foster, the Managing Director of LDS Charities, the humanitarian aid agency aligned with the Mormon Church. Also, Asha Parekh, the Director of the Refugee Services Office within the Department of Workforce Services. And Sabata Ramba, who arrived in Utah more than 15 years ago. He's a refugee from South Sudan, and he shared his own experiences. And the conversation was moderated by Eric Rohn, a student at the University of Utah.
We've talked a little bit about some of the barriers for refugees living here in Utah, getting an education and learning English to join the workforce. Maybe you could touch a little bit on your experience coming to Utah.
Refugees, as they arrive to Utah, they go through preliminary stage before they are integrated fully to the society. When I came here, Catholic Community Services was the agent that handled my file, and I was welcomed. And the first thing that they did was I had to go through medical examination, and then orientation on how the society here works, and then taught how to look for jobs and how to prepare for interviews. And from there, I was assisted with the basic necessities that I needed to get myself on my feet. And from there, I continued to work. Luckily, when I arrived here, I had a basic understanding of the English language. So I didn't have to go to Horizonte, which is actually the school that admits all refugees who needed to be taught English in order to communicate with the people around Salt Lake and Utah. So what I did was I got myself straight to work, and as I continued working, I also learned so much from the people of Utah and how the system functions here, and how socially people interacted, and then at a point I decided to come in and join the University of Utah to further my education. I hope I've answered.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you. So you mentioned, I think, an important aspect, which is joining the communities and interacting with Salt Lake City residents, and I know the church has had a large impact on advising church members to go out and go into these refugees communities and help them acclimate themselves. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit.
So we recognize, I think, as an institution, as a faith-based organization, that this group of people was so severely marginalized and needed so much resource and support and help, and that really, rather than allowing the agencies to try to do that independently and do all that heavy lifting, that really if the community came together as a whole, that 10 people lifting that same amount of weight is so much easier. And so it was just over a year ago that LDS church leaders sent out a letter worldwide asking all members of the LDS church in the communities where they live to reach out to refugees and immigrants and to provide support, whatever that support looked like. It may be financial, it may be in terms of resource, it may be simply your time. But they asked members of the church to provide support where they could anywhere in the world, recognizing that this is a pervasive problem that's continued to exponentially grow in its severity. And as we know and have heard in the press, that, you know, it's the worst it's been since post-World War II, that never have we seen this kind of refugee migration and immigrant migration, displaced persons, even within their own country and moving across borders. That it's a challenge everywhere. And as a people, the LDS people wanted to help. We ourselves were found ourselves in this situation in the early years of our organization in the mid-1800s as we ourselves were refugees driven out of several states by executive order where lives were at stake. And so we certainly have a soft spot in our heart for this particular population and trying to meet their needs and bless their lives as we as a people found safe refuge with good Christian-hearted individuals throughout the Midwest.
And Missy, what's your take through Utah Refugee Connection?
You know, as Rick was talking, I think the key thing is to understand that when we put kind of this umbrella over the word refugees, that basically is all of the world under this same umbrella. And we try to kind of label what a refugee is. And an experience from South Sudan may be completely different than something from the Middle East, yet that fear and that persecution that came from those places get down to such base human levels that we can associate that and connect on that on a very humanistic level of understanding, possibly within our own lives, what it feels like to be at that base level of fear. And hopefully that's what the LDS Church was talking to people over the pulpit to say, dig deep, feel for these people and understand that every one of these people have a story. And the story that you brought with you, I'm sure, would be so much more fascinating than even what we're talking about today, because people, you know, that story is really what moves people. And I have found that when I'm in a room with many refugees, that every single one of those people have a story that I can't imagine. That one could have lived, you know, the Sudanese who walked thousands of miles as lost boys after a civil war where parents were taken and mothers, they didn't even know where their mothers were, and they were taken across and ended up in a camp for years. And some of them made them to the resettlement, not all of them. Or the ones from Somalia who were the slaves, the Bantus, that were slaves to the Somalians. And when Islam came through the region, they said, well, oh, this particular, you know, portion of Islam doesn't like slavery, so okay, we'll join the Muslim religion. And they joined, and then as the war broke out there, these people were killed because they weren't needed anymore as their slaves, or they weren't their slaves anymore, so they would kill them. And as they went into the camps, they were safe for a little while, until the war there in Somalia broke out, and then the Somalians came in, the Somalis, and killed them in the camps. And finally the UN came and picked up all of the Bantus, 16,000 of them, and in 2006 put them in the US. And every one of these people have a story. And so the Utah Refugee Connection works to connect those people with the organizations that are supporting those. And so whether it's through OSHA's office, who is doing training and education and these incredible, they're able to get the funding through TANF that supported the LDS Church's humanitarian efforts. And they're able to do big scale funding and find jobs and work with the Division of Workforce Services because they're part of that to do that. And then there's other organizations that are like the English Skills Training Center? Learning Center. That pulls in volunteers to teach English. And so the connection actually just helps connect people because it's a hard thing. It's hard to understand where these refugees are coming from. So it's that app that's out, the Serve Refugee app, any of the organizations can put on an opportunity that people can volunteer through. And OSHA's organization, if they need to get information to an organization, they can put that on there and people will have access to that. So that's what the connection does. And Rick and I actually both are continuing to serve on the Utah Refugee Connection, and we work with OSHA and refugees, and I'm so glad to meet our new friend today. So,
yes, thank you. OSHA, In helping refugees move into a workforce, are there a population of refugees coming that maybe already had professional jobs in their countries, whether doctors, lawyers, or other professional services that maybe aren't recognized in the same manner here? And what's the challenge in integrating them into the workforce?
So there, I think since we began resettlement, there definitely, or since, Utah began offering that option here, there are refugees who come in who have professional degrees, but it is a real challenge to help make sure that someone who's trained as a doctor in their home country will have the opportunity to be a doctor here. We're working to make improvements in that piece. So Utah University Neighborhood Partners, for example, was doing some work along with the Department of Workforce Services to help improve those options for people, working with at the engineering department here to see how we could help bridge some of the training that people have in their home country with what's happening, with what they could learn here and what they need. But it's not as easy as it seems. We've had some success of late in helping people get some good jobs, and we're working hard to improve those opportunities so that more people who have training can really use that in their stepping up into a job here, because it will make a big difference in their lives.
And Sabata, in your experience with applying for jobs, did you find there was some difficulty in entering the workforce that you wanted to? And then what are your goals moving forward now?
As a matter of fact, when I first started applying to jobs, I faced difficulties here and there, but then I figured out that it was my responsibility to adjust to the requirements that are necessary to get me qualified to get the jobs that I needed. So, and those are actually some of the challenges that had made me to think of coming to join the University of Utah. And I came and I graduated, but still the challenges are there. I ended up going back to driving semi-tractor trailer after graduating. And I did that for a while and felt like, you know what, let me go back to the University of Utah and do my master's and then see what I will do from there. So basically, challenges are there and have to figure out how to get around there. Yeah.
So I think one of the resources that now exists for refugees that I think wasn't there when you came is the Utah Education and Training Center. We've been in place for about a year, now, and the purpose of the center is to help refugees access higher paying jobs. And so part of what we're doing is offering short-term training in different areas to help people along with English. And the center is a partnership with the Department of Workforce Services, Salt Lake Community College, and Utah State University. And we're offering short-term training. We've done just finished three cohorts of 15 refugees in each one in warehousing, and all of the folks that participated in that training were able to move forward and get jobs in warehousing. We're looking at offering training in welding, construction trades, medical assembly, and more warehousing cohorts next year, so that we can help people get in instead of starting at a low-end job, start at a bit higher end job when they start, so that they avoid all of the challenges of making minimum wage. And we're also off a little bit of English, but it's a partnership not just with those agencies, but with the English Skills Learning Center, with the International Rescue Committee has a piece in the Micro Business Connection Center. There's SCORE, Small Business Alliance. So there's a lot of partners that are working together to help shift this opportunities for refugees in our state. And I think that's one of the key things. We know that it's not just one agency or one group. It can't fall on anyone. It can't just be government either. I think we really need a wide range of support and partnership to make this work more successfully, so that refugees have an easier time integrating, learning about the secrets that we all know. Well, I didn't, I'm an immigrant, but I think the secrets about how you get a job in this country and how you keep that job and how you move forward in life, these are things we learn as we grow up that are things we know, but for refugees, it's a different culture and they don't know those things. And so part of what we need to do is help people learn that so that they will be successful. And I think that's why volunteering is a fantastic way to help people, because they connect with someone who has a lot of support and resources and they can do that. So, sorry.
No, thank you. Well, I think the last question I'll leave you with before we open it up to general audience questions is, I think you kind of touched upon it a little bit, but where are areas that that maybe need some improvement? How can we grow as a society to help better integrate refugees into our communities? And maybe each one of you could take a moment.
Maybe I'll start with that. If we go back to 2008 and look at the administration at the time, it was Mayor Caroon and Governor Huntsman. And people had come to them and said, we have no idea what to do with all of these gaps that we're running into with refugees who live in our community who are placed here and they're not receiving services. And so there were commissions that were put together on both the county and the state level, and Huntsman and Caroon said, okay, go do a study. And they came back with 50, and they actually did public meetings, they did a study, they did all sorts of things, and some of people, I don't know if anybody in the room was involved with that, but they really studied it. And they came back with 50 pages of single line gaps of in our community of what the refugees were running into, and that was 2008. At that time, Governor Huntsman put together the Refugee Services Office under the Department of Workforce Services. They were able to pass that through the legislature for funding that way, and the county put together some offices that Zee Zhao has been running over there under the community, under both Caroon and now Mayor McAdams. And so that kind of started it, 2008. And at the time, I got involved right after that, within months after that. And the reason I got involved was I got involved as a volunteer because somebody handed me a piece of paper and said, go help this family as part of a youth group that we were doing. And I went and helped a Somali Bantu family with one piece of paper, not knowing what I was getting myself into. And here I am, years later. Yesterday I was about at the International Charter School talking about the fight that the third daughter had been in. And I am so integrated with this family now that I was trying to figure out how to get her $20 to go to a movie the other night because she had done well enough to work through the conflict of the fight at school. So there's things like that. It's just being a friend to people. It's being on the other line side of a phone to say, oh, your lights are off? Can you walk around your house and find a box on the door to be able to take the levers and push them back and forth and see if that turns on your lights? People would have sat in darkness for 3 days because their electricity was stripped. Things like that that we don't think about because we've learned them from the time we're young and that can change people's lives by just being a friend. And so I would say what I'm seeing is since 2008, a lot has changed. There are more resources. There's more collaboration. There's more support. There's more help. But the thing that hasn't changed is it comes down to human dynamic, human relationships, and the best thing you can do is to be a friend to somebody. And it may take because you volunteer at first at the English Skills Learning Center and go help people learn English. Or you go to the Humanitarian Center and help with the English skills there. Or you find a program on Serve Refugee, the app that is out that you can find. It starts maybe by just volunteering and seeing where that leads. But I would say that hasn't changed. There's still a need for volunteers, but the resources are much better than they were in 2008.
I would just echo exactly what Missy said. It's about relationships. It's about education. It's about dispelling those biases and those prejudices that all of us hold. I certainly have held those in the past, and as I've educated myself about this issue, about who refugees are, about how they enter this country, and about how to best help them, and then actually spend time with them, something dramatic changes in each of us. I think one of the most profound videos I've seen on refugees over the last year is one, I can't remember who put it out, but it literally sat an individual across from a refugee, and they weren't allowed to speak. All they were able to do was look at each other for 3 minutes in silence. And it was amazing how souls connected during that 3 minutes, and literally how people would come to tears just sitting there looking at an individual and making that eye contact. And as soul connects with soul, and people, all of these barriers associated with political affiliation or race or religion or economic status melt away, and people realize that, I don't know what your religious beliefs are, but I personally believe that we're all brothers and sisters and that we have a responsibility to care for one another. And I think that educating ourselves about what our brothers and sisters are facing and are up against is paramount, and that's where it all begins. And then we learn about how to meet one another's needs. And I would suggest, as I've seen in my life and the life of my children, that as we engage with immigrants and refugees and people that are marginalized because of maybe some economic diversity, that as we serve each other, that both the giver and the receiver are blessed in significant ways, that lives are changed in significant ways. That something, and I don't know how that happens, but something changes in my heart. I know it has in my children's hearts, and they've become better, more sensitive, more kinder individuals whose lives are more about others than they are about themselves. And so I think it's that sensitivity to one another and learning about one another's challenges that is probably the biggest need. There's all kinds of economic needs. We could talk about housing and ESL and education and all those things. But I think the core fundamental piece is being kind to one another.
Thank you. Asha, any?
I think just in closing, I would say the refugee story is really, it's about suffering and survival, and people are at our doorstep, and so then it's what are we doing to help help refugees thrive and feel welcome in our community. And each of us has a responsibility to help in that process, I think. And it is not only is it enriching for us as a community, but it's also, as Rick said, it enriches you when you engage in that relationship because it changes your worldview. And so it's a fantastic opportunity, I think, that nobody should pass it up. There are a lot of ways you can volunteer. You can go on 211, you can call. There's 9 or 10 volunteer agencies that you can engage with and learn about and find the best way for you to be involved, but it will change your life.
Thank you. And Sabala?
I would basically agree with everything that has been mentioned here. From the side of the hosting society, I think so much has been done. I couldn't thank the LDS Church more. I've seen a lot of refugees who are well received in the LDS churches, and members of the LDS go and visit them and try to be friendly. And I think the refugees also got to have the understanding that they should be ready to open up. You see, most of the refugees who have come here are having language barrier, cultural barriers, and there is so much that they don't share in values before they arrived here. And it's also from the refugee side to realize that they should be ready to blend in. And I see that happening. It's we are moving to that direction. However, I've also noticed that from the younger generation, especially in the high school, my kids go to high school. I've also noticed that there is also retraction along these lines of Polynesians, Africans, and Mexicans. I really don't know what is happening there, but I think the society is doing its best. And if we come to realize exactly what is happening there, is our society more of embracing bullying at elementary levels and high school level? If that can be worked upon so that the upcoming generation will kind of blend in at a younger stage, that will be good compared to if we try to struggle when people are already adults and molded themselves along certain division lines and all those kind of things.
Sure.
But basically, I agree with everything that has been said. Thank you.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. Today we're airing a panel discussion about the experiences of refugees arriving in Utah and what the state and local organizations are doing to help them adjust and succeed to life in Utah. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a discussion held just a few weeks ago about how Utah is helping refugees to settle here in our communities and what services local governments and nonprofit agencies have to help arriving refugees from across the world integrate into Utah's communities and build self-sufficiency. The panelists include Missy Larson, the Chief of Staff of Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes and co-founder of the Utah Refugee Coalition, now the Utah Refugee Center. Also Rick Foster, the Managing Director of LDS Charities. Also, Asha Parekh, the director of the Refugees Service Office within the Department of Workforce Services, and Sabata Ramba, a refugee from South Sudan who arrived in Utah in 2000 from a refugee settlement area in Kenya. Ramba graduated from the University of Utah in 2014 with a degree in political science, and he's an active member in Utah's South Sudanese community. And this conversation was moderated by Eric Rohn, a University of Utah student, and it was recorded on November 14th.
Okay, if we could open it up now to... If anyone has any questions, we'll go to...
My name is Travis Wald. I'm a student here at the University of Utah studying political science and economics. I wonder if you could speak as to the political situation surrounding refugees. I know that there's been, despite the huge crisis in the Middle East, there's been a huge pushback against refugees amongst some of the more extreme political spheres. You know, using everything from suspicion of refugees being terrorists, or from of this America First thinking that we should take care of our own first before taking in others. And I wonder if you could comment as to that and how you deal with that in your jobs and in order to get people to help refugees despite those fears and suspicions. Thank you.
I'll maybe start that. I know that Asha might have better information than me, but there is very good information out there on the way, the process that refugees go through before coming here. They are the most watched group that comes into the U.S. They go through vetting after vetting after vetting, much more so than somebody coming in for a student visa or some other way coming into the state to immigrate in. There are resources on, if you just put on, you know, how are refugees vetted to come in through security on Google, you'll come up with some very good resources that show, and I know that Asha's office has some very good.
And I brought the screening handout, which is with the pizza. I don't know where the pizza is.
Oh, it's right over here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good. I'm glad you brought that.
There's the screening handout that talks about the 16-step screening process that involves biometric scanning, FBI, CIA. I mean, it's a really complex screening process that refugees go through. They're in refugee camps for 2 years. The process can take up to 2 years. For Syrian refugees, it takes even longer. So people are not let into the U.S. lightly. It's really, I think, as Missy said, they're the most watched group. And I think, you know, this is why I think it's important for us to help support people as they move in to be successful, because they've been waiting. They're in refugee camps for so many years, and then they're here. And so
it's an easy target because we do welcome over 80,000 refugees into the U.S. every year, and so it's an easy target politically to say, oh, look at all of these people that we're bringing in from around the world. I think it was 6 months ago when I had the most recent number, and Asha might know if this has changed, but there was only one Syrian family here, and they were fantastic. You know, it's not, a lot of these people are fleeing the reason they're here is because they're fleeing what we would flee. And it's sad that a lot of these people are put into the box of the fear box when they need our help. And so there is that chart over there is very good, and people should take that and look at it. Immigrants come in. We do have a risk always of problems. Coming in through the refugee program is a lot more difficult.
Can I give you some numbers very quickly? So there's 60, and depending on who you talk to, there's about 65 million refugees or displaced persons internationally, right? In this country every year, about 60 million come to this country via one of three visa types, and then there's several others, but one is work visas, the second is travel visas, and the other is student visas. And it only takes a matter of weeks or months to obtain one of those visas. So 60 million people come in through one of those three streams every single year. And less than 100,000 come through as refugees who go through this, like was mentioned, biometric, biographic, extensive screenings with all kinds of agencies. And this, I'm sorry, I thought it was a 22 point, the list that I've been using in the past, maybe it's 16 now, but if you trip up or if there's an indiscrepancy on any one of those points, you go back and start over. And so it can take in excess of 2 years. So my question to people when they ask this question, and I'm not suggesting that you're ignorant about this, but I ask them this question. If you're truly a terrorist and you're trying to enter the U.S., would you do so under the most lenient and easiest accessible streams, one of those three, student, travel, or work visas, or would you go through the most highly visible, scrutinized process that takes well over 2 years and puts you on every single government watch list and try to gain access to the country that way? Then the follow-up question I ask is, show me one refugee that has ever been convicted of a felony or an act of terrorism, is maybe the better way to put it, that came through that vetting process. And there's not one. In the decades that we've been doing this, there's not one. So again, when I talked about educating yourself, this is one of those areas where you can educate yourself and it's simple to understand. You know, would I go through that 60 million track of a student work or travel visa, or would I go through this highly scrutinized process of?
I think where you have to start to get onto the refugee list, you've got to live in a refugee camp, right? So that process even starts well before the 2 years, because you have to go pose as a refugee in a refugee camp long enough to get into the system to go do it. So it's the least likely place that the terrorists are coming
into.
That is
an awesome question, though. Thank you for asking that and allowing us to articulate an answer. I hope that makes sense.
So my name is Gage Winters. I'm a student of political science here at the University of Utah. I'm from Granger. A lot of my friends are refugees. One of them is from Sudan, too. He played basketball up here at the U last year, and now he plays for New Mexico. But what I was going to say with that is, so a lot of what I saw in my community was, because we have so many refugees, everybody, you know, they have these stereotypes in Utah about what West Valley City is, or, you know, what a community with a lot of refugees is. And I saw it as an opportunity to broaden my horizons. But how do you think you can change the minds of people in Harriman and all these other communities across the state that don't have as much diversity as ours, even here in Salt Lake City? How do you make them not respect it, but, well, how do you make them understand that there's also value in diversity?
That's a great question, and I think it's being in places like this. I think it's learning, going to school, finding opportunities to meet people, finding opportunities to hear stories, watching, you know, that show that Rick had talked about, watching documentaries, educating yourself, because you'll soon find that your heart will open up to these stories. These stories, I mean, you wouldn't believe some of these stories, like people having visions as they are in Africa about coming to Utah and seeing what how they would live, and that coming true, but lots of hardship to get here, losing family members and so many things that they've just to get here. The saddest thing that we have is people who arrive with that dream, that American dream, and it's going to be wonderful, and then they get here and they get the bullying, or they get the sadness, and they think, I'd rather go back. I had one experience a couple of years ago with my refugee oldest boy, and he'd been through four schools, Horizonte, he finally graduated from, and he was driving home with me one day, and he said, I'd just rather go back to Africa. And I said, but in Africa, you watched killings on the field. You'd rather go back to Africa? And he said, I have friends there. So it's just what you've talked about, befriending and educating. And I think sharing your story is really cool, that you have all these refugee friends. I bet every single one of those refugee friends you have a completely different story. It's opening your mouth. It's helping people learn about what it's really about.
And that's Missy Larson, the Chief of Staff to Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes, and the co-founder of the Utah Refugee Coalition, now the Utah Refugee Center. She and other panelists spoke a few weeks ago about how Utah is caring for refugees arriving in the state each year and helping them to adjust and succeed to a new life in Utah. If you'd like to hear this entire discussion again, it is available on our website, kcpw.org. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.